You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Does the little guy have a chance in the stock market? Most of the time, I think no. Like, I think Wall Street is just one big scam trying to rip everybody off. And Silicon Valley is kind of not much better. But my next guest will describe how he took Wall Street bets from this little Reddit subgroup into this. I mean, there's stories of little kids going from $500 to $55,000. People making millions because of this one Reddit Wall Street bets. Like, you might remember when they promoted GameStop and AMC and these stocks went up hundreds of percent. This is the guy that started it all. Let's hear what he has to say.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
James, you said you've been a vagabond mostly since you were 18. What does that mean? Like, did you go to college? Did you just leave home, or what did you do?
Yeah, so I turned 18. I went to go study. So DC was where I lived prior to college, and then I went to study at University of Illinois. And I decided to start a company in Boston. So I was there for a couple of years. Got acquired out of Salt Lake City, so I moved there. Then I moved back to DC, and then the financial crisis cost me my job. So then I was like taking gig jobs in California and just sporadically around the country. And then
what company did you start in Boston?
At the time, it was called iTalk. It was a computer back in the day in 2005 when I started it. It was actually the only at the time computer company that provided support to residential small business customers remotely through the internet, right? Something that Geek Squad would send their little Geek Squad car, and then you get your geeks at home. And we were able to scale that thing up. And so we were acquired. The only people that did that were enterprise level support companies. And so we were acquired by a company that was looking to close the gap from enterprise sized clients to retail, right? These are going to be volume based and blah, blah, blah.
And did you get acquired for a good amount?
Yes, but I got so that was my first lesson in finance. They're like, we can give you $1 million cash today or 20 times that in little pieces of paper you can leave on top of your desk. So I was like, I will take 20 times that pieces of paper on top of my desk. And so I learned my first lesson in, I guess, corporate mergers and acquisitions, takeovers, financing deals, and what the fuck a stock warrant means and why it's useless unless you have things like a market and a liquidity event and capital to exercise.
It's really true. And I think a lot of people have over the years that my first finance lesson was also in the uselessness of these pieces of paper. And it's funny, I see Wall Street bets as kind of this whole trend that's been happening against Wall Street, starting kind of from Silicon Valley, like the rise of crypto, the rise of things like SPACs, which are having a bear market, of course, now, but, an ability to IPO without Wall Street, and then Wall Street bets, an ability to get, actionable information. This is when you were there, actionable information about stocks other than just the CNBC or Wall Street Journal headline news, and, which is fed to them by press releases from Wall Street. So what you know, a lot of things led to Wall Street Bets. I mean, and just to kind of tell some of the stories, you've seen some remarkable things about basically kids building incredible wealth because of Wall Street Bets. Like, what's one example story?
I mean, there's tons of them. And there's also a lot that, where they lose money. But what's interesting about Wall Street Bets isn't just like an alternate source of information or actionable information, like you could say. It's also presented in an accessible way. The people that go to Wall Street Bets have a different mindset, have a different situation. They're in a different demographic, and they have different priorities than those that would watch CNBC. You're gonna subscribe to the Wall Street Journal when you're looking to invest and be responsible and grow your nest egg and have less of a tolerance for risk.
You're giving a lot of credit to the readers of the Wall Street Journal, but go ahead.
That's possible. So, but when you're younger, it's like, dude, I have like $500, right? Or maybe if I'm talking about disposable income on a monthly, maybe $100 or $200 or whatever, it's just some smaller amount. I'm never going to be able to be Warren Buffett if I use compound diversified interest bearing whatever that's 2% a year. So I'm going to go ahead and get rich quick. At least I'm going to try. And that mentality of saying, I'm also willing to lose my $200 or $500, right? I'm willing to lose 100% of what serious people call an investment, what Wall Street people call a bet, right? A lottery ticket or a chance to be able to grow that wealth. And so the mindset going into it is very different. It's yes, you have what's a good company. Yes, what's a good investment. Yes, what are those the fundamental mechanics of how the markets work? Sure, but also, hey, what's cooking, right? Where is there an advantage that we can exploit from our vantage point? You have, I don't know, investment firms that like have these really smart PhD people that do all this analysis and they have better information. You have quant firms that have like co-located computer systems and they do things really quickly with these statistical arbitrage stuff. But when it comes to the people that go on Wall Street Bets, it's like, look, I'm willing to lose all my money because yes, arguably you could say I'm a poor student or I'm a poor whatever and I need that money more than the rich person. But it's also... But I'm also able to afford that 100% loss right now. If I were, like take me, for example, I lost tons of money learning about the market, right? And eventually I figured it out. Eventually I'm okay. If I were to start today down that venture, down that journey of let's see what I can do what if I want to control my own finances, I would have lost a hell of a lot more money, right? So I'm glad I lost the money that I did when I did because I acquired knowledge and experience and all sorts of really great stuff. And now I have a lot of knowledge where I can gamble and I do when I feel like it, but I also am responsible and I do that too. So I have mortgage and kids and all sorts of other, my priorities have changed, right? So Wall Street Bets has a lot of examples of people going through this very journey. And so along the way, yeah, I've met countless people. I don't know if there's anyone in particular. I'd say one sticks out. Not because of how much he won, although it was really impressive. He made one trade and took a 900 or between $700 and $900, and he turned it into $120,000 overnight.
Oh my God!
That's
what did he do? Like, what was his like? How did it happen?
I want to say it was Roku, but I could be wrong. It's something in that vicinity of things. He bought some out of the money calls or puts, and he was banking on some like earnings surprise and he got short like expiration days, what they call these high risk. You have one day and you're either gonna lose it all and make a lot of money with a really high likelihood that you'll lose everything. But he went ahead and went all in with his $900 account and then he hit the jackpot. I mean, Roku or whatever that company was, it just went up like some insane amount and stock options lets you do that. But what's cool about that is an outlier. Even if you know ahead of time that the earnings are going to be good or that the stock price is going to go up, like it's a really complicated maneuver that he pulled off. And he admits that he put a lot of thought into it and it was an educated guess, but he also got lucky in the sense that the market moved with the speed at which it did. And once he made that money, most people, that's a very dangerous place to be in because you're then just as dangerous as when you're taking a big loss. People go on tilt. They start being reckless. They start revenge trading and they start just being stupid. there's very little attention to when people actually hit the jackpot. That had the same exact thing happens. You're like high on life. You're seeing money signs, going to quit my job, like the whole nine yards. And this guy was really wise beyond his years. You know, he was in his 20s and he had a job. He was like, dude, I removed the money. Like I withdrew the money. I kept a little bit to play around with. I put it into my 401k or Roth IRA or whatever it was. And I went back to work. He knew that he got, that he hit a one in a million. And he's one of the few people that I have spoken with that had that discipline. There's other people that have that discipline, but not with such little prior experience. And that was pretty cool.
I want to get back to that story actually in a little bit, because there is a strategy you can conceive around that possibly. So I want to talk about that in a second. But
sure.
Also, there's the story of another guy who seemed pretty smart who made $110 million on Bed Bath & Beyond. What was that story?
Talking about Ryan Cohen.
Yeah. It's somebody who was following Ryan Cohen into Bed Bath & Beyond.
I don't know the specifics of that particular story. That number is so big. Look, sometimes when I hear crazy stories, I feel a responsibility to fact check. But I tried it doing it once and it just came back and it bit me in the ass, because it's impossible within reason to actually, unless I get the guy's password, like I just need to do as best I can. But you can fake screenshots, you can fake even like, you know, a screen sharing thing. But that's a big number. I'd definitely look into checking it out. But thankfully also you have like a gazillion people that also are looking for evidence, right? They're looking at the volume, the historicals. They want to make sure they can match things up. So if it's true, then look, the guy hit a ridiculous jackpot. That's an insane amount, and by far the most I've ever heard anybody making on there. I thought 50 million was the biggest one.
There's the story in your book. So you have a book, Wall Street Bets, How Boomers Made the World's Biggest Casino for Millennials, which I love that subtitle. It's one of the few times I like a subtitle. And in the very first chapter, you have the kid who turned $500 into $55,000 on some stock.
Yep.
If I was like 14 years old, I don't even know what I would do at 55. I don't know what I would do at $50, let alone $55,000.
It's actually cool because I went through different profiles in that book and I followed kind of their stories. And that particular kid, I tracked him down, right? Because that he turned 900 bucks into like 55K in a period of like 10 days or 10 trades or something like that. And he was young. He was not allowed to use a brokerage account. He was using his parents' login, or they let him do it. And so I tracked him down, and 4 years later, he'd like got a finance degree, starting a hedge fund. Like, you know, like he went down that direction. But you know what's interesting is you have that whole thing where people go rags to riches, riches to rags to riches, back to rags. And you see the dynamic of the individual, what they're going through, how they did it, and then how the community responds to it. So he, like in particular what he did, he was one of the high profile wins way back in the day. I'm talking like 2014-ish, give or take, possibly a little bit after. And so that's a lot of money when you're talking about a high school kid. And everyone said, dude, college debt, save it, walk away, just trust us. And he did. He actually walked away and he used that to pay for his college fund. And he ended up continuing to trade throughout college and did really well. He bought a house shortly before I spoke to him, you know, in 2019 when I wrote the book. But then you have another individual who was also a college kid who was a little less meticulous, very lucky, but he just kept getting it right. He went from like 50 grand and then he lost it and then he made it back and then he lost it again or something like that. And then finally he hits big and he goes from like 50 to 150 or so. I don't remember the numbers, but I think that 700,000 was the highest that he got. After like the third trade, and people were like, dude, you just hit three in a row. It wasn't some crazy Roku one. Like it wasn't $100 to 100,000. Those were really crazy. It was more like 10,000 to 100,000. That's a lot more feasible. And so he did that a few times. He doubled up. And after the third time, they're like, dude, just don't go all in again, walk away. And after like two more trades, he went back to like nothing. He lost it. He lost it all. But that's an example of someone that,
did he get depressed?
I'm sure he did. I have no doubt. You know, it's like anyone's going to take a huge hit like that, especially, look, if you have if you start with something, you make something, and then you lose it again, you're like, ah, this sucks. I'm not going to replicate that again. I'm going to save up again. I'm going to try, because if I only correct this one thing, then I would be okay. And that thinking is, although with it's well intended, but usually not executed properly. But he says, let's do it. So he gets money again. He tries this again, and now he's actually doing it well, and it gets to his head. And he does he makes the same mistake, possibly disguised as a different thing, which was, dude, like, you have to manage your risk to some extent. You have to be able to take your money off, and you can't just go all in with every single one, because it's not all within your control, even if your analysis is 100%. And so I'm sure he did get depressed, and maybe I'm assuming one of two things happened. He either said, all right, you know what? I never had $1 million to start with, or 700 grand. So therefore, I didn't really lose it. Like, I'm no worse off now than I was yesterday. I just up here, right? And so if he has that mindset, then he can recollect and keep learning from it. Hopefully, he'll turn down the aggressiveness a little bit, because that is an emotional roller coaster that's hard on the body. But the other thing that happens with people like that is they say, you know what? That's it. Like, clearly, this isn't for me. That's too much. And then you have the occasional one that just keeps trying and trying and trying and just, but they're focused on the wrong stuff, right? And
it's interesting. Like, risk, we all know there's money in investing. Many people have gotten wealthy investing. But the critical thing is, like, 1% of investing, I feel, is sort of the idea, like, oh, I'm going to try this trade. And then 99% is how you manage your risk. But, you know, and those numbers could be different a little bit when you're younger, and like you said, you could take more risks, and also when you're younger, you don't know how to manage risks as well, just for lots of reasons. But like, what's your story? Like, you started Wall Street Bets, and until I read your book, I didn't know how old Wall Street Bets was. You started around 2012, and of course, it became famous in 2021 when AMC and GameStop just went bonkers because of threads on Wall Street Bets. What's the story?
Well, and just Wall Street Bets was actually well known within the finance community by then. By 2021, people in finance knew about Wall Street Bets because there'd been a ton of shenanigans that they pulled off by then, right? Like, a lot of really high profile stunts. 2021 took it from CNBC and put it on Good Morning America, right? So that was the difference, is it had this heartwarming story that was easy to explain to people. It's been around for a long time. And when it comes, to risk, it's more so than just the managing of the risk of the trade. Like, when I was in this investor conference this week, I went to dinner with a bunch of them, and we start getting into this discussion. This one investor says to me, I feel bad for all the people that lost money because, you know, the terms it was like retail, like, you know, they got caught holding the bag. They're all big losers, like big smart money won, whatever. And I'm like, what is that? Like, I don't understand what any of those words you just used. What do you mean retail lost? What is that? Describe it to me, right? And so he's like, well, anyone that bought at the peak and is still holding is now down. I'm like, yeah, but your like portfolio is down too. And I'm not even ask you what you're in. Everything's down right now. Right? Like, so like, you're also holding a bag, right? And he goes, no, but the thing is that, like, you know, if they were to cash out, like, well, so if you're investing, you're telling me that they've already lost money. But if you're using the investing standard, then wait 30 years from now and tell me how they're doing with their bag that they're holding, right? So it's either they're trading and it's like, you know, I win and I lose on some trades, or I'm investing. And obviously there's no such thing as a retail investor on Wall Street Bets. And, he goes, yeah, but they're just gambling. And I go, but so are you. And he visibly got upset. He's like, no, I am a serious investor. I research companies. I check the fundamental valuation and I compare it to the market, like Warren Buffett. And I said, yeah, but there's risk associated with this. Like, the only difference between a gambler and you is exactly how much you're willing to risk. You're telling me that your firm offers me risk-free returns? Because if so, I'm going to pull my money right out of there, right? Like, there's absolutely no way that you can make money without it. The difference is you have the sliding scale. If you want to make a little but not lose a lot, like, there it is. You can just do like a CDs or like, you know, like a savings account, like with a bank, and it's going to pay you nothing and it's not going to go up or down. And if you go the other extreme, you want to say, well, I want 10% risk because I'm going to go small caps because this index, whatever, then you're potentially going to expose your portfolio to more volatility. He goes, but it's a portfolio. And I go, it's a strategy. right? Like, and so it's a different mindset. So if you're telling me if I keep dialing this thing all the way to here, you're now saying that this is an irresponsible gamble. I'm calling it a conscientious approach to the market. You're calling it a back holding loss. They're calling it an expenditure, right? This is a purchase of a thing like a lottery ticket, which I have now lost that money, but there's a chance that I make it. But if I don't, this was the way that I spent. I didn't go buy a Gucci bag or like, you know, Versace shoes. I bought some puts. And they're going to provide knowledge, entertainment. It's going to provide opportunities. It's going to provide all sorts of different things. But they're playing in the exact same arena. So yeah, no, risk is interesting. And then I'll get to the, you know, how I started. But this is, I guess, working my way backwards. When it comes to trading, it's not just managing risk. It's like the execution of the entire thing. When I started Wall Street Bets, a couple things were taking place. I'd lost my job because of the financial crisis. And so I'd been a year without a steady job. And I was just doing little gig jobs here and there. And it sucked. Then I got a really good job and it was paying me very well. And I had a good disposable income. And I'm single at the time and no kids and no mortgage and no anything. And so I'm like, I can take risk right now. And I never want to be in that same situation. And I'm in DC at this point, and I'm walking past this like satellite Occupy Wall Street movement. And I'm feeling bad for all the people that are sitting out there in the cold because they're not going to get anywhere with their protest. But it's in my head every day and I'm still upset. And everyone's mad at the banks because they're using Wall Street like a casino. And I said to myself, well, look, there's no law that prohibits individuals from using Wall Street like a casino and allows the banks to do that. The law says everyone can use the Wall Street as they see fit. So we're going to wear Wall Street as a badge of honor, like when referring to it as a casino. It's meant to be an insult when talking about Goldman Sachs, but when talking about us, it's going to be like, damn right, it's a casino and it's fun as hell. So that's a little bit of what's going on in my head as far as my attitude towards Wall Street. And then secondly, I now want to not be without money or unemployed again. So I'm going to try and take my now, I don't know, thousands of dollars of disposable income a month, and I'm going to risk all of it with the hopes of having millions in a piggy bank. And so I start Wall Street Bets with the intention of finding like-minded people and learning from people that want to use the market in the same capacity with the same outlook. Because if you go online and look for communities that want to teach you, you had at the time either investing communities, which is like, this is how you diversify. And then you have the other ones, which are, well, we're professional traders. We click stuff on the screen all day long, but it's a craft and it's a very serious, difficult one. And most people just don't make it past the starting gate. And you have to quit your job in order to do it. And so I'm like, no. I want the one that's fun and it's easy and I do it on the side. And so that's why I started Wall Street Bets. And so this is when I start taking my journey and I start attracting people, both students and people that wanted to learn, people that wanted to risk and trade. And surprisingly, it also attracted professionals that were like, this place looks fun. We're going to hang out here. And so the professionals start sharing knowledge. And I'm like, I'm in a chat room at one point with a handful of successful solo individual traders that are multimillionaires. And I said, cool. All right. So now we have three of you in here that have made it. What stock do I buy? I want to get rich like you. And they said, doesn't work like that. I'm like, yes, it does. You guys are all done. Just tell me what to buy and I'll do it and we're good. And he goes, no, but like the thing is, it's even if we tell you, you won't make money. And I'm like, they're like, you need to define your stuff. And now they're getting all technical. I mean, like, just shut up. All right, let's try a different approach because I'm clearly not communicating myself. You, how do you make money? He goes, well, I draw lines on a screen, technical analysis, and I'll do Fibonacci's and resistance, support, whatever. And I'm like, all right, cool. What about you? And the other guy goes, well, I have a system, a computer system that algorithmically figures out what the statistical significance of the standard deviation stuff and it reverts to that. Okay. And what about you? And he goes, well, those guys are both stupid. I pay 20 grand a month for a news feed that I get the news like 10 seconds before the actual breaking news does. That gives me 10 seconds on Twitter or anyone else to buy the or sell the, you know, interest rate decision. So I go, excellent. All right. So let's do a contest where the three of you are going to trade at once. Ahead of time, you tell me what you're going to do. And then you do it in here live. And then you show us the results. Whoever wins is the one that's going to tell me what stock to buy. And they go, fine. So we pick like a, you know, interest rate day so that the news guy can participate. And I said, good, let's go. What are you going to do? And the first guy goes, well, there's resistance right here and support. So I'm going to wait till it goes up here and then I'm going to short down to this thing. And then the other guy goes, well, you know, I don't know. I'm not touching my computer. It does it for me, but my model is going to predict that if this move is so volatile, it's going to both short and long at the same time so that it can revert to the mean. And I go, okay, so you're going to short. The second guy's going to short and long somehow. And then what about news guy? What are you going to do? He goes, well, I'm going to wait until I know the future and then I'm going to go all in. And so I'm like, all right, let's do it. And so interest rate comes in. It's like a, you know, bullish market decision. It was like a, you know, zero interest rate, whatever. I don't remember. And so that meant he had to long the market. So all three of them do their thing within seconds. I'm talking 10 seconds later. They're like, all right, I'm done. I'm like, cool, you guys are done. That was quick, 10 seconds. All right, how'd you do? All three of them just completely killed it, right? They all made a stupid amounts of money. And I said, hold on, but you stuck to the plan? You shorted, you longed, and you did both? And we go, yep. Like, I give up. How the fuck? Like, they're like, that's why we can't tell you what stock to buy. Like, even if I told you what I was going to do ahead of time, even if we told each other, because we know what we're doing, we still would have lost each other's money if we did each other's strategy, because you wouldn't have had the testicular fortitude, to put it delicately, to hold on to these positions the way that you're supposed to. And the conviction and the knowledge of how it takes place. And so that execution and conviction and understanding and reasoning says to me, okay, that's how you're actually able to do all three, because the market never just goes up, right? If you look at the number right now and you compare it to yesterday's number, sure, it went up, but in the middle, it did this thing. And so anyway, so that was my journey through Wall Street Bets, and it started growing and people started coming up with insane cheat codes, workarounds, inefficiencies, right? Like the finance people call it arbitrage. It's literally just profiting opportunities that pertain only to the retail crowd. And that's the goal.
The guy who did the news stuff, that almost seems like equivalent to insider trade, like legal insider trading. Like he gets the news like 10 seconds before and is able to trade on it. That seems like actually a pretty safe strategy.
It does, right? And so that's what I was thinking too. So I told the guy after we were friends after many months, I said, come on, dude, you have got to hook us all up, right? Now it's half really professionals in this chat room and the other half are noobs, 20 people in here. Do us a solid, plug your chat bot into here and we want to know the future too. And the guy said, I'll do it, no problem. That's not an issue, but I'm going to warn you, you will not make money and you're not going to do it properly. And like, I would not go, this guy is so good at his own strategy that he would do Forex mainly because he needed strong liquidity for his position. And his broker, which then uses the bank as like the counterparty to the trade, had to change his account number every time this guy made a trade or every day or something, because the banks, the counterparties, refused to ever do business with that account number again, because he would just rob them. Like he would put $10 million into a trade, leverage it like ridiculous amounts and just take everything. So the guy said, don't go all in like me, just take a small amount, plugs it in and fuck it in. It's hard as hell because you have to digest, you have 10 seconds, you see the information and you say, okay, you know, like Amazon's earnings per share came in at this and this thing came in at that. Like you have to then digest it quickly. Is that bullish or bearish? Right. You need to find the right thing to trade. You have to click it without fat fingering it because you're sweating balls. You have to quickly also do, you know, by then we were all advanced enough that we understand position sizing and proper bet placements. And so you need to place the bet correctly with an insanely volatile market such that it's going to get filled. So like market orders are in play at this point. Like, and we all got our asses kicked, right? And so so it's a skill and it's legal insider trading, sure, but it's only very few people that could ever pull that off. 10 years later, yeah.
I mean, couldn't he like coach a little bit and say, okay, if Amazon's earnings were expected to be a dollar and it comes in at $1.10 and the market was, Amazon was down that day, probably Amazon's going to bounce hard on this exceeding expectations, like a little coaching in different situations. And he could
potentially do it, but it's just tricky because like the he's just going off of these liquidity events, these catalyst moments with insane movements. If the Fed today, like on a Thursday, not unscheduled thing, got out there and says, I'm making interest rates 20%, all right, to upset the markets, you would assume the markets are going to go down. But if you zoom into the chart, it's going to move up and down a lot, right? And it's those 2 or 3 seconds in between when everyone's going, what the fuck does this mean? That you don't trust yourself.
Right.
And you say, I think the market should go down because this went thing up, but the market is going up for some reason. So no, I'm going to close my position and I'm going to go with the market and I'm going to swap it out to a long. Then the market really processes it correctly and then it completely destroys on you. But also don't like the fat finger concept is a complicated one. And then thirdly, he didn't use stocks because news didn't translate directly and immediately into the stock prices the way that the Forex markets or futures did. And with Forex markets, you now need to have a full understanding of currency pairs and market dynamics. Like if you say, I remember his favorite trade ever, he talked about the Swiss franc forever was pegged to the euro at like $1.20 or something like that. And at one point they said, we're going to stop pegging this thing. So it was an unscheduled news thing. And he had this bracelet that vibrated just before watches or whatever. So he'd run to his computer because it said like the Bank of Switzerland is no longer going to peg the thing. And so he's got to quickly find the correct pair to do it with. In this case, I think it was an obvious euro. But you have to size it quickly, open up the chart, drag it into it, put the trade in, and then execute it before the computers do. Because remember, you're not up against other humans that also need to process this information. You're up against the computer that's going to do it in a second, right? And so, I don't know. It's an okay strategy, but I don't know that it's got, I don't even know, I haven't talked to him forever, but I don't know if it still exists as a strategy because information is becoming more accessible, right, more immediate. So, and he knew this. So he was always stashing as much money away as he could because he knew that strategy would only last for so long.
Like basically like every investment strategy, like as soon as enough people know it, it works until it doesn't, which of course was the case with AMC and GameStop. Like a lot of people, jumped onto the Wall Street Bets bandwagon hoping to get the next one. And maybe they did get the next one, but then eventually, the band stopped playing.
Yeah.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period. And I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop. Really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So what was happening to you when all this, like, what even happened with AMC? I think AMC was the first one, or was it GameStop?
I don't know how it is that you want to define the first one. GameStop was the big one, and it was the leading one. And then there was a bunch of other ones that kind of piggybacked on that momentum. It was the biggest one historically on pretty much any way you want to measure it. But the maneuvers to an outset, to the person watching Good Morning America, they're going to say, a bunch of people got online and decided to buy this thing and the stock went up because when you buy, it goes up. Supply and demand. And that's true, but it's incomplete because it was a lot more sophisticated, what Wall Street, the people in Wall Street Bets did. They had to pull in a bunch of other maneuvers that they had fine-tuned years prior. In fact, I don't think I addressed this in my book. I wouldn't have, no, because the thing published in 2020. So an example of what happened with GameStop is like, well, we are a lot of people. Back then, there were probably 1 million people, maybe 2 million people on Wall Street Bets. With on an average account, that's not very significant. And so it's enough to move the thing around, but it's not enough to make it go from $20 to like $500. So you have the short squeeze component too. So you're buying the stock, that's one component. It's a short squeeze. I'll assume that we all know what that means. And so that's the second upward pressure. But there was also an options play where they call this a gamma squeeze. And this is a really fun and very creative way to pretty much push prices around. If you say, I got $500 to my name, but I'd like to have somebody else buy stocks for me, you buy stock options and you buy certain types of stock options. And you buy those stock options from some other individual, some other participant, some market maker or some whatever it might be. And very frequently, these crazy stock options, the specific ones I'm mentioning, are only being doled out by funds that are delta neutral. Delta neutral meaning I don't care if the GameStop goes up or down, I'll sell you the stock option, I'll cover my bases because I have math on my side, you know, and if the price of GameStop goes up, meaning I have to pay you for the winning this stock options bet, that's fine because I'll go ahead and buy the stocks and I'll hedge accordingly. And so they pretty much break even on that trade, but they profit a little bit from the, let's call it a fee. And so a lot of people did this where they're like, yeah, let's make the market maker people buy hedge against our options position. It doesn't cost very much money. And then that's going to make them actually purchase the full share. So I bought $500 worth of stock options. They have to work by $50,000 worth of shares, right? And as the share price goes up, because the factor one is lots of buyers, number two, it's a short squeeze, and number three, now you're having these counterparties having to hedge their delta neutral bets. Now you've increased that price increase exponentially. And what's fun about these options gamma squeezes is the higher the price goes, the amount of hedging required goes up exponentially. If something goes up by 5%, they need to buy, let's say, 10% of the underlying. And then if it goes up by 10%, they got to buy 30% of the, like, it goes up fast. And so people were doing that at the same time. At the same moment, they're like, you know, the talking heads on the other side of the trades weren't really helping the situation while kicking the Fortinet nets. But so they had already done this delta gamma squeeze thing a year or two prior. They'd actually perfected it. They tweaked it. We made the cover of Business Week magazine because they said these people figure out how to manipulate stock prices with very little money, right? And they'd done it with Plug, and they'd done it with big ones like Tesla. They'd done it with Virgin Galactic. They'd done it with a bunch of other ones. And they made these things go up 10, 20%. I mean, these are big companies, right? So GameStop, yeah, that was the first one. If that's the name we're going to use. Hertz arguably was kind of one of those, right? Hertz during the pandemic went from like $2 a share to like $5 a share because everyone just said, hey, you know, you're supposed to buy low and sell high. $2 is pretty close to zero. So let's give it a shot. I'm not going to go out of business. And sure enough, they more than doubled the price. And so, so I pretty much walked you through GameStop, but also gave you the context of it not being the first one per se.
Yeah. And the idea that you have a million people doing this kind of highly leveraged strategy, like they didn't use leverage, but the strategy itself is leveraged in that a small amount of buying creates a lot bigger activity on the other side.
But they did,
a million people is powerful.
It is powerful, exactly. But they did use leverage. That is what made it powerful. Because remember, the people on Wall Street bets, like, I got my $500. I want a yacht, right? So how do I do that? So that's with leverage. But like, and that's nothing new to Wall Street. Just, you know, a year prior to that, like you had, or I don't know, I'm losing track of time, like the Archegos Capital, where they like took down, what was it, Viacom? Or I don't remember the specific of the stock, but what was it called? It wasn't a cash for delivery. It was a swap, the true value swap to a T something swap. It's another leveraged thingy where somebody else has to take on the risk. It's an asymmetric risk situation. And it disrupts the market, you know, the plumbing of the market. And it exposes systemic risks. GameStop nearly broke the market in ways that I did not know that at the time. I did not know that shortly after. I did not know that until I read a book by a Wall Street Journal journalist that broke down some stuff that was unknown to me. And then some of the things that were exposed in the hearing, the congressional hearing, the testimony.
Like, in what way did it break the market?
So you have a market where if you buy a stock and then you sell that stock right away, your account is going to say you have $100. And then when you buy the stock, it says you now have $50. And now you have one share of this thing worth $50. So your account is still worth $100. And then when you sell it, it says you have zero shares again, but now you have $50 back, right? So you haven't really done anything. So on the front end, that's what people think is happening. I just got the stock and then I got rid of the stock. Behind the scenes, there's a whole thing that happens where they go, slow down, people. You don't have the stock yet because it takes 2 days for you to actually receive this thing legally. Why? Because back in the day, they used horses to send the physical pieces of paper across Manhattan and they haven't updated the systems yet. But whatever, it's the way that it works. It's why sometimes like banks won't, you know, clear your check, right? It takes business days to do the thing, right? Yeah, it's dumb. So they go ahead and they say, I'm going to give you an IOU for this stock. So you owe me money. And then like, you know, 2 days later, when you get the share, you have to actually give it all back. And then you have to give me the money. You got to wait for it to clear. So you start racking up these IOU tabs all over the place where that example I used, a $50 bought and sold, the broker's on the hook for $50 until the whole transaction goes through the plumbing of the system. So 2 days later, the broker's back to the square even. But meantime, you, the user, like you're still buying and selling other shit and you're racking up this tab on the broker's side of things. But like that tab is included in the clearing houses, like the brokers, the markets, like the counterparties, everyone needs to start getting these credits. And once they reach a certain limit, right, when they said, dude, you now owe me $10 million, even though 10 million people only bought and sold that share or whatever that math works out to be, 2 million people. But now we're worried that you're not going to be able to pay up in case something goes wrong. So you need to put up a margin call. You need to put up more capital so that this thing can take place. And if you don't, then I'm not going to allow you to participate in the market anymore for any shares at all, right? And I think that Robinhood's tab was like $7 billion at the height of one particular day. That was just Robinhood, right? There was like all these other participants along the way. The markets had to turn around and the regulators said, you know what? Let's go ahead and waive these things just for today. Because if we enforce this and we margin call, there's not enough cash in the world to meet this particular margin call. Like there's just no, we did not like contemplate the situation already. And then we'd have to essentially just prevent any brokerage from participating. The market's going to close until the whole thing comes up with like $10 trillion. You know, so humans had to actually intervene and waive this. And that was relevant because, you know, there was a lot of scrutiny around the pausing the buy button. That pausing the buy button was honestly the least bad of all the possible scenarios that they were facing.
I mean, did you have to testify in front of Congress?
No, I didn't testify. I actively participate in, what's interesting about Congress is they were more interested in grilling the institutional participants for why it's not fair for the little guy, which is cool, right? I never saw that coming. I thought that Congress was going to say, why are these clowns playing with our toys? Like, this is for big boys. But no, it was cool. And so, you know, they had Keith Gill, who was the only recognizable public figure that was leading the charge there, but you know, they took it easy on him and he just chilled. But now they took it out on Robinhood, on Citadel, on Gabe Plotkin, I forget his thing. But
and then Elon Musk gets involved, or Chamath gets involved. They're all tweeting about, you know, let's drive Wall Street crazy. Let's you know, go heavily into GameStop. What was that a surprise when they got involved?
I mean, I don't know exactly where I was with my surprise threshold by the time they tweeted, right? But there was a handful of different surprises. There was a point at which I stopped being surprised. I'm like watching White House press briefings or asking people about Wall Street bets. Like, that was pretty surreal. And, you know, but by then it was... But it built up to the point where the surprise factor stopped going away. But I think that what was cool about this, and you have celebrities, you have influencers, CEOs, you have really noteworthy people sharing their opinion on this. And I think the relevancy, I think the reason why there was a passion and it was this heartwarming story is because there was a lot of built up animosity from the people that were picketing and camping outside of Wall Street and DC when I was, you know, starting Wall Street Bets. They were like, we never got closure, right? The banks got their bailout, you know, the thing, like, yeah, the economy recovered a decade later, but or at least the stocks did. And you know, the economy was well, everyone got jobs, they moved on with their life, but they never got that closure they so wanted. And so the moment that they see that you have these little guys stirring up the same problem, making the Wall Street side of the institutions lose money, that's like, damn right, right? These kids can play too, and they're beating you to your own game. And that validation was, I think it resurfaced. I don't know that GameStop began with this philosophical, you know, moral sure. The story thing, but but it certainly did end that way. It was good reason.
I mean, did Elon or Chamath, were they participating at all on Wall Street Bets, or it was just kind of out of the blue that they were tweeting about it and kind of encouraging what was happening?
They're fully aware of Wall Street Bets, and they, you know, like that. I don't know if they're like, I don't know what the word participate means, because you know, a lot of people refer to Wall Street Bets like the subreddit, which is the biggest hub. But Wall Street Bets now exists, and even then existed in like, you know, it was omnipresent. You have different social media channels. You have Telegram and Discord and Facebook, and you have groups all over the place. You have like subsets of groups where they're doing Satoshi streets and silver streets and Korean streets and whatever street bets. And so I think that the symbolism, the idea of, hey, this is the, this is a group, this is a collective that just kind of exists on the internet, and they're doing this. In that sense, they participated, because on Twitter, they're saying stonks and whatever, and they're making references or directly sometimes linking to the subreddit, whatever. I don't know that they went in and made comments. I know that there are a lot of people that did. Like, I think that John Stewart, for example, and a bunch of other people went on Wall Street Bets that do like a question answer thing. But I don't know, when you say participate, what does it mean? Go to the site and check out what they're doing? Because I guarantee everyone did.
I mean, I guess like you said, they probably weren't commenting on it, but in some way they were fueling it. Like, they certainly got a lot of people aware of Wall Street Bets that might not have been previously aware of it. And
yeah, they got in the mindset. Exactly.
Yeah. And then, you know, you start this in 2012, like how much, you know, but you were obviously, it wasn't paying the bills. Like, how much did Wall Street Bets start to take over the time in your life?
Wall Street Bets has until 2019, 2020, was just a hobby, passion. I had my good job, and I didn't intend on quitting my good job. I intended on getting rich on the side. I enjoy getting up and showering, going to work, and working on being challenged and learning stuff and just having stuff to do with my life. So it was never in my, I never had it visualized as me quitting. Eventually I was like, all right, well, I was done with DC. I decided to move to Mexico, but I started a company, and then I, you know, like moved on from that one. And I pursued my entire life a parallel career until 2019, when I'm like, you know what? I've been an entrepreneur for a large portion of my professional career. And so I said, why don't I focus my next entrepreneurial venture on Wall Street Bets related business, right? There's now a big enough market. There's a big enough audience. There's big enough brand recognition. There's enough that can be done with this. And so I took several steps to go there, such as writing that book and a bunch of other things. So I would say, and that's when I said, okay, I'm no longer going, you know, that's when I quit my job, if we want to say that. And I've been focusing on Wall Street Bets stuff ever since.
With spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere. This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans. That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
I know you created like a portfolio of like Nancy Pelosi and other Congress people's stocks. What are some of the things that you've done, and what's been the reaction?
I've done a lot of little experiments, and they've been fun, but they've been unstructured, and they've all had varying levels of success. But the theme that I'm using when I'm experimenting stuff is, let's do market related stuff. Let's disrupt. Let's cater to this demographic, right? This demographic that is, I'm going to fend for myself. I consume my information on TikTok instead of CNBC. I have this attitude about how to just, you know, gig economies and influencers. And so anyway, so it's always been around that in the market. And I've had varying levels. Look, I got into crypto. Crypto is something that I evaluated when it first came out. I was like, this is a really cool experiment, but it has no place on Wall Street Bets because it's lacking some technical capacity. It doesn't have enough liquidity. It doesn't have an ease of use. Like Robinhood has just super easy onboarding. It doesn't give stupid spreads. The legality was questionable. The ability to convert from fiat to not. So I was like, cool experiment. Good luck with that, but not on Wall Street Bets. And then I reevaluated that stance when crypto's, I admit that it took too long to reevaluate it, but crypto is now a completely different beast. It's not just coins that go up and down. It's like an entire parallel infrastructure and ecosystem. So I experimented a lot with that. And that was a lot of fun. And I still am very involved with that. And I think that there's definitely some junction there. And then I did some things with, start going to a lot of these conferences, whether they be financial conferences or crypto conferences. And I'll host these big parties and sponsorships. We'll get sponsors, do NFTs.
Were we at the Las Vegas Web3 Expo a few weeks ago?
I was
there too. All right. Yeah, I did the keynote speech kicking off the conference that 12 people were in the room. 6,000 people attended the conference, but nobody attended any of the sessions, which is kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, sometimes they're hit or miss. There's been a lot of different ones, but like the biggest project that I'm most excited about that I'm not making very much noise, but I'm making a lot of behind the scenes progress on, is one that I'd actually mentioned before the pandemic and got shut down. So here was my vision. You have in 2012, when I started Wall Street Bets, you have the system being angry at the banks because they're using Wall Street like a casino. So I start a place and I call it the Wall Street Bets, right? Well, not Bob, but just Wall Street Bets. This is the casino of Wall Street and it's a badge of honor. And then that took on a life of its own. Now the new insult that people are using is the gamification of stock trading, right? This is not a game. This is not a toy. This is grown-up stuff. You can ruin your life. And I said, okay, let's go ahead and make that the badge of honor too. So let's turn this thing into a game, but it won't be a simulation. It's not going to be an actual entertainment thing. Well, it'll be entertaining, but it's going to be, let's go trade stocks, but we're going to dress it like a game. And such as esports is able to do. And so esports can get a ton of people. You get a ton of people that watch other people play video games, and that's a thing, right? And then you have competitive examples where I can draw upon from the experience. Like poker, it's not very exciting if you're standing over someone's shoulder, but it's very exciting if you watch the World Series of Poker for various reasons. It's same thing with chess, I guess, to some extent. And then when it comes to finally coming up with rules and framework around this, the Ultimate Fighting Championship has some elements as well, which is you have different styles, different mixed martial arts, and you're allowing people to combine it in their own way to see which style is able to outperform the other one and the understandability. So I'm pretty advanced in pulling off this vision, which is an esports-less league format, right? This is a set of rules that describe the way that this competitive trading is going to be looking like, whereby people can then go in there and competitively trade based off of different stuff. And it's going to be presented as if you're watching an esports with the announcers and the stadium and the things. And like,
this is such a great idea. I love this.
Yeah.
Are you going to do it on Twitch? Like people should, do people stream or Twitch stream day trading?
They do, but I haven't yet found, it's a hard nut to crack and it's got some issues. If I start trading and I start streaming my trade, I'm going to lose a lot of viewers because it's, like I said, it's like standing over my shoulder when I'm playing.
Yeah.
And that's a problem, right? And it's also a problem if you're trying to gamify it. Like, this does not look or feel like a game. It's not paced like a game. And people that are neutral participants, meaning like, I don't know shit about trading stocks, but I understand video games and I understand winning stuff, right? And so if the rules can be explained in a 1-2-3, and if the rules are also created in such a way that they promote action, right? And they also simplify what it is that people are seeing. That example of the three traders that I shared earlier exemplifies the complexity of how you can transmit that to somebody that's just like, I know stocks are shares in the company, and you can buy them and they can make money. Two, what the hell did I just see? What's a short? What's a thing? What's a, you know, what's a, like, mean reversion strategy? Like, I don't get any of that. But I understand a green and a red when the line goes up and down, right? So yeah, so people do it, but it's not, it's only getting people that are already specialists, and it's not getting like a cult type following. So yeah, it'll be Twitch, and it's also going to be TV, and it's going to be live in some instances, like, you know, for having some big finales or whatever, stadium style.
So you get some traders, and yeah, it's almost like a fantasy sports thing. Like, we kind of, you know, have our heroes and our villains and who we want to win. We can even maybe place bets on them. And is it like in a day? Is it an hour? Is it like your example earlier where it was 10 seconds? Like, what's the format?
Those are excellent questions. And those are literally the ones that are getting ironed out. There's many ones that have worked so far. And we're just weighing in some logistics. Like, it's a complicated thing because, like, you know, I sat down with a broker and I said, broker, I'm going to do this thing. Can you make me a brokerage that looks like a video game for me, and I'm going to need this, that, and the other. And so they're like, oh, cool. Yeah, I'll do that. And it's easy because we were thinking about having this thing where you can compete with groups and social trading. And I said, yeah, that's fine, but not going to work for me. And they go, it will, trust me, because, like, at least we can see the leaderboard and who's winning. I go, no, because I'll bet you and I are going to disagree on who's winning. I go, well, whoever's making the most money. And I go, based off of what metric, right? Like, is it percentage? Is it percentage per trade? Is it like the account size? Because if it's the account size, is the guy that started with more money better than the one that, like, you know, and then you started coming into regulatory things. Like, if it's in the US and using stocks, they have to have PDT, like pattern day trading, for which anyone under 25 with an account under 25 grand can't play. Like, it gets hairy. So, but I've solved an overwhelming number of these issues, thankfully. And so the format's going to be the shortest length full-blown live episode that you can watch is going to be one trading day, right? One session. That's the shortest that works. You then can then narrow that 6.5 hours down to 1 hour or whatever of highlights if you don't want to watch it live and you just want to see where the money was made and lost, right? But the full stream itself for people that want to watch the deliberation process and all these other things and these thinking out loud and get to see how the players get frustrated or whatever. Like, that stuff is the shortest amounts. And then you can extend that. I 3 days is the longest that I'm contemplating at this point. That also works before you start.
And so you're watching, let's say there's a dozen, is it like anybody can play that and you watch all of them, or are you going to pick like a dozen sort of famous traders and they're in there and they're describing their trades and they're up and down, and maybe they all start off with like $100,000. So it's percentages and percentage per trade. Like, how are you going to do it?
Yeah, no, it's an excellent question. So, like, my innocent 2019 self says, I'm going to take like a Dave Portnoy and a Jim Cramer and the trading space, this homeless guy from the street and whatever, I'm having them all go all at it, right? Like, just because it's got to be entertaining. Like, the people that are behind the desk are also a source of that content. And so I go to my lawyers. I'm like, how fucked am I, right? With this concept. And they go, well, surprisingly, you know, there's a few things to watch out for, but for the most part, there's nothing against what you're trying to do.
Yeah, what could possibly be wrong with that?
Well, apparently nothing, right? Like, there's a few things you got to be careful about, like disclosure. I mean, it's minor stuff, but anyways.
Oh yeah, like they can't own it beforehand and then convince everybody that in the country who's watching them to, hey, this stock's great. And then meanwhile, their hedge fund behind the scenes is dumping all the shares while their $100,000 account is buying the shares.
Yeah, well, that's called breaking the law. Yeah, you can't break the law. Yeah, no. Like, you can't be fraudulent. No, there's other stuff, like people that don't have bad intentions can also get in trouble. And those are the ones that I'm concerned about. Like,
yeah,
of course, if you're sitting on a huge freaking position and you're manipulating this thing, yeah, that's easy. No, it's smaller thing. It's like if you're trading and all of a sudden you end up with more than 5% of the share of the company, that's a problem, right? Because then you have to fill out forms with the government because that's part of the rules, right? So it's more like that.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I guess another point that you're just making is if everybody starts off with a $100,000 account, and if you're judging the metric of success is percentage gain by the end of the day, but the problem is, like, if you're buying a microcap stock that has no liquidity, your buying alone could push your percentage gain up. I guess you have to be liquid in cash by the end of the day to make it fair.
Yes, yes, that exists. But that line of questioning, like if you sit here thinking about this, you're going to come up with like 100 more examples like that, right? Like yeah. I can see how your brain's juices are flowing. That is one of 6 billion different things. There's situations under which you can't close your position out, right? Like if you're doing a stock options plan, expired worthless or whatever, like you just can't, like,
yeah,
you know, are you going to take the hit, right? Or at this point you have an open position. So is it the account value? Or like there's a lot of stuff. And they've all been addressed separately, but the question about the entertainment thing, I go to the lawyers and the lawyers say, you cannot pick out of all the things, you can't hand select your players. And I said, that's bullshit. It's not going to work unless I have cool, like entertaining people. And they said, yes, but the FCC, the communications committee or whatever, the federal communications thing says you can't, it's an unfair contest. You can't give it to, because otherwise I'm going to give it to my friends and my friends are going to win the prize or whatever. And so you have to do it like American Idol. That's how you can do it. And so I said, all right, fine. So I want to do it like America. So next thing you know, I'm like, now I'm doing a reality TV show that's being produced in order to get my contestants. But I'm still kind of left with that itch of saying, I still want it to be not American Idol. So like I'm in parallel, continuing to push forward when it comes to having just this lee with rules and with which you can measure these competition. People can on their own just go in there, start getting ranked, right? And you start getting stats because just like with baseball, you can say this guy's got like a whatever percent win rate and this percent R and this percent whatever. And this is how many ranked matches he's played, right? Because he registered and followed these rules. Some of these rules are purposely going to force people to do things that might not otherwise do.
Like
or prevent them from doing things, such as trading certain instruments, or such as not trading certain instruments, or such as using margin versus not using margin, right? So those things are all addressed separately. So that allows you to, it allows me to isolate specific skill sets. If I tell people you can only trade with stock options, we now know that you need to know how to find the right stock and how to find the right direction of the underlying stock as a starting gate. Stock options is a beast all in it of itself. Then you have to worry about executing those and what your concerns are. And then that competition is looking at that skill set much more than the other ones. Whereas if you have another one, which is like, let's do a stock picking contest, then that's just whatever. And based off of those rules. And then there's the ones that allow you to make it look as much like a stock type, stock type trade, but to practice a very specific thing, which is what is the optimum moment to buy. Right. And where is the optimum moment to sell? And all of a sudden you have like an educational component where people watching at home being like, okay, yesterday I knew that a stock was a thing of a company that goes up and down, but now I know when to buy it. And I think I can do it better than the guy on TV can. Right. And the next thing you know, they're trying to do it on their own. Like I did with poker. I didn't know how to play poker until Chris Moneymaker won this World Series.
I love this idea. You're pitching it as a TV show or is it going to be like
TV. I use TV because I just got off the phone with them. No, I mean, there is a TV show because I need to get my contestants, right? So that's being done, but then it's going to be online. Like TV doesn't allow you to do 6.5 hours live streaming. That's a Twitch thing. And you need to be able to interact with the players. I'm going after these Gen Z millennials I've never had a television subscription in my life unless I was forced to bundle it with my internet. So no, it's going to be on the internet.
I totally want to play in this. So tell me when I could start like competing to be a contestant. I want in.
I will let you know as soon as it's up, but it's going to be within the not too distant future.
It sounds really exciting. And then, cause then, like I said, you could have a fantasy sports component where people could have leagues, their team of people that they draft. And then you're going against your friends as a different team. And it could be a whole, you know, you ever see that TV show, The League? Like, everybody could have fantasy leagues for this.
It is pretty cool. And it gets even more exciting than that because when I was in Vegas, next to the WebEx thing, the Italian one, like the whatever the hotel right next to the Venetian, there was another gaming expo. And I got wind of it because a lot of people that I knew were going to be there. And
Jay, did you know this? There was a gaming thing right in the Venetian then?
I heard about it, but I didn't show up for it.
Well, why didn't you go to that?
Well, because I was busy working the whole time. So
for me, sorry. Sorry.
Yes.
Sorry, James.
I'll tell you one of the things that dominated the conversation there. So a few months ago, I got wind that the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, was going to do these things called event contracts. At face value, they look like whatever, right? These are these binary outcome bets where you say the price of Bitcoin is going to be above 40,000 today, right? And at the end of the day, you either make 100% of your money or you lose 100% of your money. But they're calling these things event contracts, right? So there's a few components to it. Number one, there's contracts, right? That contract is a tradable instrument like a stock option or a futures contract. Number two, it's on the CME, so it's regulated and it has high liquidity and has a marketplace. Number three, it's an event, right? It's an event contract. It's a binary outcome based off of stuff that happens in the real world. So now you have a tradable instrument that is a liquid, regulated thing whose price is, or whose outcome is derived off of stuff that happens in the real world. I'm like, that is fucking big. And I don't think everybody realizes why yet. And
well, it's big because it's 100% gambling. It's like, you can't even like joke around or make a rationalization that that's not gambling.
Well, philosophically, I had a fucking field day for it because exactly right. It's like, how can you justify this as a financial instrument? Like stock options, they're good for hedging. I get it, right? Like, you know, and there's a futures, the same thing. There's a lot of things and you can use them to your own liking such that they give you gambling results. But you're right. This one has no way to dress it up like anything other than gambling. So it's funny and it's ironic and it was definitely some food for thought. But once you get past laughing at the situation, you now have a very, very, very big opening here, which is now, like you just said, this is gambling, right? And they're starting off by gambling it on stock prices so you can dress it up like it. That's what's to stop somebody to say, I think the Dodgers are going to win the World Series, right? And now all of a sudden you're like, well, that's interesting, right? Sports gambling exists elsewhere, sure. But now you have a tradable contract that is liquid and regulated on a marketplace as well, like with, you know, proper counterparties. Having a contract that is tradable, I'm not sure if you or your audience understands the impact of that. You don't have to wait for the outcome of that binary event to take place. You can sell for a profit. If you're like, team is winning, you can cash out, right? And give somebody else that contract. And so that allows you to define your risk and have a lot more fun with it on pretty much anything. So I said, the next thing that you're going to see is charts, like the kind that people use Fibonacci lines on, of sports teams that are going to win or lose a particular game or a particular year or a particular thing or players. And you're going to be able to plot technical analysis things, and you're actually going to have market information being able to provide, like it's being provided to people in real time about stuff that's happening in the real world and how that's going to affect your game. And guess what? Like now you can trade the Dodgers game in my esports competition too. Not now, but you'll be able to in the same way when it comes like, what is your instrument of choice? Well, I will choose Apple and the other guy's, well, I'm doing Bitcoin. Well, the other guy, so I'm doing the Dodgers game because it's trading at $50 right now. And I think it's going to be trading at 70 by the end of the day.
It's right? Sort of like election prediction markets too, like predicted.org.
Exactly right.
You know, they chart like, oh, is Herschel Walker going to be Raphael Warnock? Well, first he's at 45 cents, then he's at 51 cents, then after the debate he's at 49 cents, and you can make the bet and you get paid off 100 cents on election day, or you could sell along the way. But I haven't figured out a way to
right.
I haven't figured out a way to bet on elections in size. Like these are all pretty heavily regulated, these prediction markets.
That's why the Chicago Mercantile Exchange plays a very prediction markets exist everywhere. You can do it on anything.
And crypto prediction markets.
But they don't exist with liquidity, right? They don't exist on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. This is all like the New York Stock Exchange level. And they're going to be following right behind there because there's a lot of money in the market. The marketplace like, dude, I let people come and buy and sell shit. Like that's my job, right? Like, and I make sure that I follow the law, what they're selling and buying, it's up to them. But they provide, it's like selling stuff on Amazon. You're automatically exposing yourself to a lot of buyers and sellers. And it's a really strong, strong way. So you have that liquidity. You can do it in size and you can do it with sophistication and you can do it with like, and then you can start garnering cross-pollination where you have trader. Like I enjoy watching sports, but I don't gamble on them. And I definitely don't like them enough to keep up to date on this feed. But if there's a, but but I'm going to look into them. I'm going to, when it, like, if and when they do come out, I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to follow this game and I'm going to follow this thing here and I'm going to see how this feels like. And I'm now going to expose myself to gambling in sports. Likewise, people that are sports gamblers are like, I don't do stock market stuff, but I heard I can bet on the Dodgers using that app or Robinhood or whatever. And I believe that it's not priced correctly because the proper sports gambling infrastructure uses things like spreads and handicaps or whatever to calculate the odds. The market over there is a free market, meaning it starts off with 50-50 odds and then the price is determined by supply and demand. So any inefficiencies in that supply, in that pricing, like any errors in that price, I'm going to arbit out. I'm going to arbitrage. It's an arbitrage. Like, this is a sophisticated financial thing. Can be explained really simply as the morons on Robinhood don't realize the Dodgers are going to win or that they have this handicap. So I'm going to go ahead and buy my bet over there. Or the morons over there think they're going to win and they're not going to because they don't know what they're doing. I'm going to go ahead and sell it over there or hedge my bets or whatever, close the pricing gap. And now all of a sudden you have people using that are sports people that are using Robinhood. So that cross-pollination is going to lead into more participation and more liquidity and more gambling and more just shenanigans.
And so, and your TV/Twitch stream, you know, your idea,
I'm calling it esports. It's I need to change it, but for now it's what I'm calling it.
Yeah, e-betting somehow. I don't know, e-investing. But I love this idea. What do you think is the timeline from when you're going to actually start doing stuff? I mean, I know you're doing stuff, but I mean, when
it's already being done. And so you'll start being able to see it. I'm going to say, like, at this point, we're in November, Thanksgiving. I'm going to say it's going to be the first quarter of next year.
And this whole thing is a great application for crypto. Cause like, if you think of crypto as the internet of value, like anything of value could be traded for anything else of value. I could create a contract, i.e. a smart contract where it says, oh, the Dodgers are going to win, and buy this crypto if you think the Dodgers are going to win. And the smart contract works out, you know, how people get paid out and how the crypto goes up and down and so on. And I could then create a smart contract. Biden's going to run for re-election in 2024. Like, you could bet on that. You know, anybody can create smart contracts for anything. And it seems like this is a perfect application for DeFi and crypto.
Yeah, well, all of that already exists. In fact, already places where you can just say, what would you like to create? And we'll make the pool for you. And then...
there are crypto prediction markets for chess, for instance.
Yeah. There's the concept of the application is already there. The issue bumps in. Like, the issue comes in when it comes to liquidity in some cases because they're smart contracts. The oracles need to be reliable. Crypto and Wall Street are emerging, period. You're already seeing it, right? It's no longer a prediction. It's a fact. Right. You have stuff that's trading on the NASDAQ that derives its value from crypto and vice versa. Big money is already, you know, carving out a space for crypto. The news or entertainment or whatever you want to call it, you have the crypto programming on all the boring adult investment channels like CNBC. They all bring up the indices and they bring up crypto on the bottom ticker thing now. So like it's here and it's there and it's the same. It's just an additional asset class or set of instruments that exist or different ways of transacting with the world.
Well, I'm very excited about this project of yours. And I want to be a contestant on America's Got Investing or whatever name you're calling it. That's a bad name. Don't use that one. And I'm very impressed by everything you've done with Wall Street Bets, plus your authenticity about the why of how you were doing this, like, the Occupy Wall Street story and the kind of simmering resentment that happened after the Great Recession and all the bailouts and what's happened since. And look, I hope these next things you do have a lot of success. And like I said, I, for the eighth time, it sounds like fun. I want in. So just to play, just to be,
I will
just,
let you know,
just to compete. I'm a competitor. So Jamie Bragosinski, awesome. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast and come on again when your thing's launching and we'll talk about it and try to generate as much buzz as possible or help you generate as much buzz as possible. And thanks again.
Appreciate it. Take care. Have a good time.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.